The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, or would that be TMO to go? No, it's Mac Geek Gab, episode 609 for Monday, June 13th, 2016. Folks, and welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, the show that eventually became and is Car Talk for Apple geeks, answering your questions, sharing your tips, solving your problems, helping you get the most out of your computer, with the goal being that we all learn, me included, at least three new things each and every time we get together. Sponsors for this particular episode include Atlassian, a name that you might not know, but you will. Makers of Bitbucket, Jira, and more. We'll talk more about them shortly, as well as Gazelle at gazelle.com, where you can sell off all your old Apple stuff here in San Francisco, California. I'm Dave Hamilton.
Huh? Wow. And here, still in Fairfield, Connecticut, this is John F. Braun. And it's funny, Dave, because, you know, you went in the time travel machine, and I'd almost say that you did this because one of the podcasts that you and I both know and love has hit a milestone today. I'm just guessing.
Yeah,
and that's why you said TMO to go.
That is, yeah. So it just so happens that today is exactly the 11th anniversary of the day that we started or released the first episode of this podcast, but we did not call it Mac Geek Gab on the first day. We didn't have that name. My wife Lisa had not come up with that name as of day one, so we called it TMO to go. And it's interesting that because it was a podcast and it was something you could take with you and listen in the car or at the gym or whatever. So that was sort of the working title while we were messing around with this thing, and then sure enough, obviously it became Mac Geek Gab, which is a much better name, and here we are. But yeah, happy anniversary, man.
Did Lisa come up with?
She did. Absolutely. Yeah, she said, okay. I said to her, I'm like, everything. Listen, my wife is like a genius. She comes up with all these things, and she'll mention them like offhandedly. But if I look back over the decades that we've been together, like all these great little things that exist in the world exist because she's off the top of her head said, oh, you should do this. I'm like, hey, wait a minute. That's a really good idea. So no, she said it was actually Geek Gab. She's like, you should call it the Geek Gab. And I'm like, wow, that's a good name. And I said, how about Mac Geek Gab? Which, of course, in retrospect, maybe my addition of Mac to the name is the, you know, if arguably if anything's hampering us, it's that, right? That we didn't call it just Geek Gab, because now it's not just Macs that we talk about, but it's iPhones and iPads and watches and, you know, Synologies and TiVos and everything else under the sun.
Well, I'm a big fan of Lisa.
Same.
Because, you know, she's part of our family here. But number two, because, you know, I get these emails, you know, every now and then saying, hey, you know, here's some dough.
Right. Yeah, sure. Yeah. It's never a bad
thing. Because I guess she does the books, right?
She does do the books. Yeah. She wasn't back then, not at that point in time, but since she has started doing it. Yeah. So happy anniversary. We start our 12th year together.
Yeah, and we're still together.
I know. We've outlasted most marriages. So there you go. I think so.
And we don't fight too much.
No, not too much. You know, we're honest with each other. It's all good. Hey,
it's a good marriage.
It is. But, yeah, no, it's a good partnership for sure.
But Dave, you are in San Francisco. I'm going to guess, because there's this thing that happens every year out there, not Macworld Expo, sadly, because that's on hiatus officially.
It's dead.
But you're at the other, well, there's two other things. I don't know if the other thing is still happening, but you are at the Worldwide Developers Conference.
I was this morning. Yeah, I had a press pass for the conference today. But
oh, you did. I saw you. You did a nice selfie. You were in the but what's their venue this year?
Well, they did it. They did all the events today, which include both the keynote the platform State of the Union, which is an awesome event that they also live stream, and it just ended. So it doesn't matter when you're listening to this show, you could watch it on the, you know, on the replay, which they'll have. And then the Apple Design Awards, all three of those events happened at the Bill Graham Civic Center, which holds with seats in there about 7,500 people. And that was good because it got all the attendees in, it got all the press in, and it got a bunch of Apple employees in as well. So those three events happen today. They pack them all in, and then the sessions all start tomorrow and run through Friday, and that's over at the Moscone West, which is a couple blocks away.
Okay, cool. And so I saw the keynote, and I would say this time around it went off. I think there was a hiccup at the beginning, at least when I watched it on my Apple TV.
Oh, interesting.
But yeah, well, you know, Tim did the, you know, there was a memorial at the beginning.
Yeah.
And then it skipped back to the beginning again, at least on my stream. Sure. And then I fast forwarded like a minute or so, and then I got to the the live feed. But other than that, it was, you know, unlike some in the past, it was impeccable on the Apple TV in my home AV setup. So I was able to stream the entire thing.
The stream
thing was
uninterrupted in the room itself.
Yeah, the sound van or, you know, we had that one.
Yeah, no, I remember. It
was episode with the Asian, subtitles. And I'm like, huh?
So let's talk about this, because there was quite a bit that happened today in the keynote.
Yeah.
So I don't even know where I'm going to talk about the first thing, because we talked about the name of this show, which, of course, is Mac Geek Gab. So let's rewind back to where it all began. Initially, it was the operating system that we ran on our Macs was called System Software, right? And it was System Software 1 through 6 through 7. And then I believe it was, I should have looked this up. It was either 7.1 or 7.5. They started calling it Mac OS 7.5. And then it was Mac OS 8, Mac OS 9. And then, of course, Mac OS 10 with the Roman numeral 10. And then, after iOS came out, we dropped the Mac and just started calling it OS 10. And when I say we, of course, I mean Apple. And it's been OS 10 for a while now. But, you know, things would have been confusing because we would have had OS 10, 10.12 announced today, and iOS 10 announced today. And that would have started getting really confusing. And plus, they also have tvOS and watchOS. So it is now Mac OS, lowercase m, no space between the C and the O. So it is like tvOS and watchOS and iOS. So it is just Mac OS now. So it's not the same Mac OS we had back in the 7.5 days, but it's a new, refreshed, slightly more humble Mac OS, at least compared to its brethren.
Right. And you're jumping ahead a bit, but for naming consistency, I don't blame them for doing this. And, you know, just a sneak peek here is I do believe that the next version is going to be called Sierra.
That's right.
Is that right?
Yeah. Which is a word I believe we can all agree to pronounce correctly, even those folks who live in California. So that's good.
Right. Well, we had our dear friend Allison Sheridan.
It wasn't just Allison. It was many, many people who live in California call that mountain here El Capitan, as they are wont to do, I suppose. So.
Right. So our reflection was there's no chance. There's a majorly reduced chance that people in California will say this wrong.
No, I think we all agree.
That was our conclusion.
On how to say it. Yeah.
Hi, Allison.
but I suppose we'll talk about a lot of the different aspects, whatever sort of came to mind for you and I. But if I could give it an overreaching statement, I would say that what Apple did today was about integration, right? The integrating their operating systems and devices with each other. Things like Apple's now, again, and this is all with the new operating systems that developers have in their hands today, and there might be some public betas throughout, but in the fall, everyone gets their hands on these things, or at least everyone that can, and we'll talk about that. But in terms of integration, shared clipboard between devices, so copy something on your Mac, paste it on your iPhone, vice versa, great. Opening up APIs for things like Siri and messages and all of that, that again allow third-party developers to integrate things more richly. The phone call on iOS, they announced, and you can and should watch the keynote, frankly, but they announced phone call, a phone API, if you will. So when you get a call from someone on like Skype or Slack or whatever, those developers now can write their apps so that when you get a phone call, it looks like and acts like a normal phone call. It just tells you that it's on the app. So lots of integration things. I named some of my favorites as we were just running through this, John. There's some of the highlights, I guess. Any for you?
Well, no, I'm well, yes. So when I said no, I didn't really mean no, but to me, I agree with you in that the big value of the whole Apple ecosystem is that their devices more and more, and you know, they were giving, of course, the developers, who without them, where would we be?
Right.
A sneak peek is that all of the devices, whether it be the watch or the TV or iOS or now macOS, all kind of grok each other. They talk to each other and they do increasingly useful things among each other. And I still think that is why a lot of people enjoy the Apple ecosystem, and they're forwarding that. So, you know, my hat's off to, you know, Tim and the rest of the crew there, because I believe that is his vision, you know, to totally continue the vision of Steve, is we want to make all of your parts of your, you know, it sounds corny, but digital life, we want to make them all do the best that they can to make you happy and make your friends and family and all the people that you deal with happy. And I think they pulled it off here. I you know, some said the presentations were kind of long here and there, and, you know, I'll give a little fish shake here.
The Apple Music presentation went far too long in comparison to everything else.
Well, I'm just going to offer this here. So I saw a number of my tech journalist brethren, mostly people that are about the same age as you and I, Dave.
Sure.
Shaking their fist at, this part took too long, this part took too long, I wasn't interested in this. And my only reflection, my friend, is, you know what? This probably was not meant for your consumption.
No, but it still took too long. I mean, yeah,
that, but they were highlighting things that I think were important to the audience. Like the one thing that struck me. So one thing that struck me at the beginning, well, hold on, you know, let me finish, okay, and then right, you go.
Okay.
But for example, they were highlighting the fact that we have so many first-time attendees here. The
72%.
Yeah, 72%. The youngest developer in the audience, 9 years old,
and nine-year-old
saw
girl,
a shot of her, that's with right, her mom. Yep. And the thing is, I think that this presentation was focused on young developers. So that's all I'm going to say. And then, you know, if you want to take it up, go ahead.
But that's very true.
So that's what we're highlighting, like messages. I agree with you. The enhancements to messages and the emojis and stuff like that. I was like, yawn. And
I think don't put words in my mouth. I think that's
no,
awesome.
I won't. Go ahead.
Don't agree on that. I don't think that was a yawn at all. I think
some people in the audience said you spent that I saw in my Twitter feed were like, you spent way too much time on messages. And I'm like, the thing is, you and I are not the audience for messages and emojis.
Again,
please don't put
words in my mouth. I use messages all the time, including emojis. Yeah. But no,
I'm talking to the more seasoned tech journalists that I saw commenting on this that said it was too long. I don't think it was meant for them to consume or get excited about. I think it was for another audience. So
I think the only part that I felt sort of meandered, and it was the part about Apple Music. The woman that was doing it, she had a like great energy and awesome hair. Like that, her hair is worth watching the keynote alone. It was fantastic, and I was far away from her, you know, and I wasn't seeing her on a screen. So you'll see close-ups of this, which I'm sure are astounding. But she really meandered. It wasn't the topic that she went in that wasn't of interest to me. I mean, obviously music and the music app. But listen, I just released an album on Apple Music, right? So you should go and check that out, flingrocks.com. The album is called Bovine Abduction, and it's our 5-song EP. It's pretty awesome. We engineered it all in the studio where I am not right now. But so this is of great interest to me, and them making the app better and all of that is obviously something I would like to see. She meandered through that in a way where it was clear she was simultaneously having fun and a little bit nervous. When Eddie Q came back out on stage, he raced through his presentation, so much so that he got to a slide and skipped it and said, "All right, I'm done." And Craig Federighi literally had to run on stage. He was not expecting Eddie to skip a slide, you know, and then Eddie was like, "All right, thanks. Back to you, Craig." And Craig comes like booking out from the back. So I think it was just a pacing thing. But if that's the biggest problem they had while simultaneously integrating all of these new faces into a keynote, I think that's okay. I mean, they'll learn from this. I doubt she will ever present that way again. She may well present again, but I think she'll get better coaching and all of that, which is good. So I thought it was interesting. You know, there was no new wow in terms of hardware. There was no one more thing in terms of a, you know, new device.
Well, there was nothing.
That's correct.
In terms of hardware for us that, you know, we're like, was there going to be a new MacBook Pro or a new, or anything? No, there was zero hardware, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm. It's a developer conference. I mean, it's better to focus on the software. I'm excited as an Apple Watch user. They've made a lot of changes. I haven't tried this yet, so I can only go on Apple's word, but they've made a lot of changes where apps can pre-launch themselves or keep themselves up to date so that you're not waiting, you know, 10, 15, 20, 30 seconds for an app to become responsive for you. I look forward to seeing how that does. The new watch faces are cool. The new integrations, again, you know, back to that where you can apps can have more to do with like the dock and all of that on the watch. Finally, use for that button on the side that doesn't just bring up my favorites of my friends. Very cool stuff.
Now, what warmed my heart? So maybe we'll try to go sequentially here. So watchOS.
I don't think we should. I mean, we can, but I don't think we should go point by point through everything. I think people can watch the keynote. Just list our highlights. Let's go another 3 or 4 minutes and then move onward.
Okay. Well, highlight, Scribble.
Yeah.
Dude.
So explain what Scribble is. Yep.
Well, Scribble is basically going back to the day of, you know, when you and I like to use graffiti. So it's basically a shorthand on the watch where you can basically write out what you want and it transcribes it to something that the recipient can read. So it's kind of like... Yeah, to me, it's getting back to graffiti, which is what the shorthand that the Palm used for you to quickly. It's basically a way for you to write something on the watch and then somebody can read it and make sense of it. So I thought that was cool. The other thing I thought was cool about the watchOS, you know, pretty innovative feature. Well, you know, especially in light of, you know, things happening in the world here, was the SOS thing. Was, you know, emergency 911, you know, something's happening, I'm in trouble, let me alert my contacts, let me know I'm safe. And, you know, I saw this too, you know, what happened recently, I saw this on Facebook as well. I got notifications from people that lived in Orlando saying, you know, I'm cool, I'm all right, I'm fine. Yeah. And I think that was a nice addition, and they, I don't think they planned it to coincide, but it's a... Sure. Nice as well. So watchOS, and you're a watch user, but you know, the speed and the memory and all those things, I think were welcome to anybody who uses the watch, because I think it's still a work in progress, right?
Yeah, well, I was wondering how much further Apple could go with the watch, given the current hardware. Like, I mean, at some point, the limitations will need to be solved with hardware. And frankly, I thought we were already there. So I was pleasantly surprised as a watch user to see that they're, you know, continuing to improve things given the, you know, the existing hardware, the watch, the first gen hardware, essentially, not even essentially, it is single sign on where you can sign on to.
So now we're going to tvOS, but dude, that has been even I have the, I believe it's the third generation Apple TV. I do not have the latest like you. Yeah. You have the latest, right?
I do. Yeah, I got it.
And that's always been
developer program. So,
and like, I'm sorry, guys, but it's a pain in the ass for channels that I pay for and subscribe to that I still have to do this dance to enter this authentication code and then go to my browser and nothing. Why can't you remember? And Apple obviously heard our plea.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, you know, they, I mean, actually I was talking to some folks in the PR department after the announcement, they weren't talking about this ahead of time. And, some of them were saying, oh, you know, that's like my favorite feature because it drives me crazy that I have to go through this. It's like, yeah, good. They feel the pain point. That's good. So, yeah. I'm trying to think of, there was so much stuff and I want to talk about, I also want to get to what I learned watching the, platform State of the Union as well.
Okay. I mean, I'll toss out a few things. Mac OS. Yeah. So of course, you know, it's Mac OS now, the naming, they've Sherlocked some things. For those that don't know what we mean by that, Sherlock is a feature that Apple introduced early on in the day that basically destroyed the business of a company that made something called Sherlock, which was a great search technology. So Apple Sherlocked a few things here. And you know, hey, that happens. You compliment Apple by writing something that does something they don't, and then they kind of look at it and say, okay, we're inspired. So Universal Clipboard, I think, is nice in Sierra.
Yeah. And that should have been Sherlocked because Apple can do it better. Well, no, Apple has the ability to do it better than any third-party developer could because of the limitations that third-party apps have to live within. So,
yeah. Yep. I'm wary of what they call optimized storage, which is something that current products do. So basically they claim that they're going to clear out the cruft.
Yeah, that I have a feeling we're going to be talking a lot about that come this
fall. Well, there are existing products. I mean, Clean My Mac, and yeah. there are several products out there that already do a fine job of this.
Yeah, it's true.
I think Apple will do an okay job of it. I don't think they're going to displace the other products.
My prediction is that Apple will do a fine job of it, and we will have no idea what they do. And that's the problem, right? Is like Clean My Mac is awesome, I think, because it absolutely is clear about what it does and what it's about to do for you. Whereas I just have this feeling that we're going to head down this path of, well, I don't know. What did it do? I don't know. Oh, great.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And then some things we saw that I expected to happen, but they announced them, was Apple Pay on the web. I mean, that's kind of a continuity thing,
yep.
right?
Yep. Integration. Yep. Absolutely.
That's cool. And then Siri is another thing technically they could have done, but I think they were waiting to get it right. So yeah. It's kind of nice that we're going to have Siri.
I'm going to detour us here. I want to talk a little bit about Siri on the, in terms of what I learned in the platform State of the Union. So cool. It's because now third-party apps can take advantage of Siri. This is not a daunting thing at all for third-party apps to deal with. It's, in fact, very, very simple. What happens is Siri, the OS framework, still takes advantage of everything. They did this example, and I'll just share it because it was good. It said, you know, tell my app Hyperdrive that, you know, use Hyperdrive to tell Obi-Wan Kenobi you're my only hope. Right. Or send a hyperspace message to Obi-Wan Kenobi and tell him he's my only hope. And so Siri is doing all the parsing of this. And it's saying, OK, there's a third party app named Hyperdrive or Hyperspace or whatever they called it. Great. OK, I know who to send this message to. Obi-Wan Kenobi. Great. I know that. I also can look up and see that Ben Kenobi's nickname in your contacts record is Obi-Wan. So, yep, I know the right person to attach to this. And then I know the message. So Siri is doing all of this work before the third-party app is ever involved. And then it takes this very simple text package and ships it, you know, hands it, I should say, to the app. And the app gets it and says, oh, great. I need to send this message to, you know, Ben Kenobi. Awesome. And then it's done. So it's not like apps have to suddenly become Siri masters. It's up to Siri to remain being the Siri master, and it's just up to the app to expose itself and say, I will accept you know, Siri messages, let's go. And it doesn't have to be a messaging app. It could be anything. But, you know, it could be call me an Uber or whatever. And at my current location, it's like, great. I know your current location. I'm going to send, you know, and it ships that off or passes that off to the Uber app. And great, you're good to go. So I as Siri gets better, every app that supports it will get better, too. And the apps don't have to be doing any of the heavy lifting of what Siri is. So I think that's cool.
Yeah. And I think what you said dovetails into something you and I talked about briefly before the show. And not that people really care about that, though maybe they do. But then, you know, tune in before the show. But still, the they mentioned the concept that is interesting because I had not heard it used in this terminology, though I'm familiar with it. But they talked about differential privacy. I'll just say I think it's interesting. Differential privacy, to try to put it in a nutshell, is you always have this tension between AI like Siri.
Yeah,
we'll call Siri AI for the time being, though she really isn't, you know, but let's call her an AI or artificial intelligence or like a, you know, personal digital assistant, whatever you want to call it. The thing is, they highlighted this thing they call differential privacy. And in a nutshell, differential privacy is trying to balance the tension between watching what you do and doing smart things, like you said, Dave. Okay, I know that this means that. I think that's a perfect example. But the thing is, how do you balance that with not revealing too much personal information? That's basically what they were talking about in the keynote, is that we're embracing this thing of differential privacy and that we're going to protect your information, but we're also going to watch you to the level that we think we can without revealing too much about you. And that's, I think, the best I can say right now.
I think at a high level that the last thing you said there is we want to send some bit of information that you want us to send, but we don't want it to be personally identifiable back to you. They did it, and again, watching the platform State of the Union might help. I'm not convinced it helped me.
Oh, okay.
Understand it. No, and I mean in general for our listeners here, it you know, they said they did a which is better, spaces or tabs, right? It was just a stupid thing, but it was an example of okay, I want to submit my answer, but I don't want Apple to know. I don't want anybody that sees Apple's data to know. So they're using really, really complex math to inject noise into the answers. So any one answer, you couldn't even tell what that answer is. But when they aggregate them all together, they can filter out the noise and see which way the vote is trending. But your point is actually better than mine. Yours, where you said, you know, sending information without pointing it back to you specifically, that's a good thing. So I like it. Yeah. Hey, in terms of jumping back to the keynote, but the Apple Now finally will have a home app. Anybody that wanted to do stuff with HomeKit, you needed a third-party app to configure it all, to add your devices, to create your scenes, all of that stuff. Now, there's some great third-party apps that you can use for free. I often use the Elgato Eve app, and it worked great. But it, you know, it's nice that Apple has one now, or at least will in iOS 10. So,
another thing that's evolving because, you know, when you first told me this, Dave, I'm like, yeah, well, I think we discussed it on a recent show. I'm like, well, where's HomeKit on my iPhone? And you're like, well, it should be here. And I'm like, well, it's not. And it's like, oh, well, that's because you haven't installed the third-party app to enable it in your, and I'm like, well, that's stupid.
Yep.
Or I may have not said that, but I thought that because I'm like, well, dude, no, you should have a menu choice for it.
Yeah.
And on the one hand, it may make sense that unless you have a HomeKit compatible app, why show the menu choice? And I downloaded the Eve app, and as it turns out, the devices that I have are not yet HomeKit compatible. Sure. It involves both having a chip and, you know, the API and all that stuff. So that's good. You know, I like they showed I think the thing that, you know, made me interested, and I think you were interested too, was the whole geofencing concept on it. It's like, all right, well, if I'm driving up to my house and I have a HomeKit compatible garage door, I probably want it to open it for me, but not someone else. And it's like, well, duh.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So HomeKit's another thing that's evolving, which I think is great. Home automation is going to be the next big thing, or one of the next big things, right?
Definitely. Can I blow your mind for a second, John? Because I don't...
You can try.
I don't know that if you know this yet, because it wasn't mentioned in the keynote. It was mentioned in the... and now I'm pulling a John F. Braun, not telling you what I'm talking about. It was mentioned in the State of the Union. And of course, there is a session with a name that betrays this bit of truth. Apple has developed, and with the new version, certainly of macOS Sierra, and possibly with the others, but I think it's just in macOS Sierra developer preview right now, Apple has developed a new file system called Apple File System. And here's the thing, HFS Plus.
I saw mutterings about that. Now, is it ZFS or no?
Well, okay, so I don't know. I haven't dug that deep yet. But what I do know is this. It is built for flash drives or SSDs. And this file system is built to work from the watch all the way up to the Mac, including the iPhone and iPad in the middle. So it's built for use on flash and SSDs, which makes a lot of sense. It's built with encryption at its core. So encryption is just part of what this file system does. It's all 64-bit, and they say that it's resilient. Now, here's some specifics of what it does.
Resilient, kind of in the sense, like I think what we've seen currently is there's something called journaling, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so it's kind of like, right. So journaling is something that's in the current OS that will try to if it detects a problem, it'll try to rewind you to a known good state. I just want to inject that.
No, that's
so
right.
Know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So the current OS tries to do this, and I'm not going to tell you about my time machine falling apart a couple of days ago, and I had to actually redo it. And one of the problems was it said I can't recover your journaling. Sorry, yeah, dude. Okay. So I tried the Garth thing, and it eventually fell apart.
Here's what this does.
Resilient. I like that because we all need that, Dave.
It allows for snapshots, full volume snapshots, mountable, and it supports reverting. So, think of the obvious scenario as a classroom environment where you want to have kids show up for, period A, and have their computers or devices, whatever they are, working in a certain way, but they're going to make some changes and manipulate them. And then for period B, you want everybody to start at exactly the same spot that people in period A did. And so snapshots can do that. Obviously, they can also help greatly for backup software and all sorts of other things. So there's snapshots. Cloning. This is interesting. In looking at the way people use their computers, Apple sorted out that there is a lot of duplication. Same file in different places being used for different things. Well, now with Apple File System, it will clone that. So it uses zero space for anything but the first iteration of that data. And it can be done with files or directories. Very, very interesting. I mean, it's kind of like hard links, if you will, right?
I was going to say, hard links, when we saw the what happened when people migrated from iPhoto or Aperture to Photos, that was exactly, and I think Time Machine does the same thing. It makes something the same size, but it's not really the same size because they use these things called hard links. Mm-hmm. So it's a cool thing. So
it is excellent. So I'm looking forward to seeing where this goes. They said it is part of the developer preview of macOS Sierra, and it is coming to all Apple devices soon. And that's how they said it. So I don't know what soon means. I think they have some ideas as to what soon means, but we will find out. So, yeah, fun stuff.
Have you looked at ZFS at all? Because ZFS is something that I think mostly the Unix crowd is really excited about, and a place that I think a lot of people thought Apple would go, being Unix based. But
Apple played so it with like it for a while.
Well, it sounds like they're borrowing, because the things you mentioned, I think a lot of them were mentioned in ZFS,
correct?
Which is where a lot of people thought OS X would go, or I'm sorry, Mac OS would go.
Well, but, OS X at the time. Yeah, yeah.
So it sounds like Apple has been inspired by some of the better features of ZFS.
I would agree with that. Yeah. So yeah, this is cool. It's good to see. I mean, it's always scary when this stuff happens. The first group of people that should be on alert about this or anyone that are anyone that is using a spinning drive as your boot drive, because it doesn't sound like Apple File System is for you. And that's okay. I think that, my guess is that Apple will handle this transition in a way that doesn't force people that shouldn't be using Apple File System to use it. Speaking of transitions, macOS Sierra is not like macOS or OS X El Capitan in that it doesn't run on all the same Macs that your prior OS ran on. At this point in time, you basically need a 2009 or later Mac to run macOS Sierra. Because El Capitan and Yosemite before it would run on, I think, basically, and I'm generalizing here, but basically anything from 2007 forward. So, yeah.
No, I'm with you. I saw a couple of people in my feed saying, yeah, well, my late 2008 MacBook Pro, I'm going to have to retire it, or I can't use it.
You can't use
it. Well, I'm sure there's going to be a hack, but it'll be unpleasant. Like many people that try to hack macOS.
There's already lots of things you can't do in El Capitan on those machines. Yeah. It's fine. It's how it works. I mean, listen,
we got to move forward. Progress.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I can't wait. Now, my deal when I travel is for WWDC is we always wind up doing a podcast while I'm on the road. And so that is, my machine is treated as sacred until that show is published. And at that point, this is a test machine for me. And so I do bring another drive and I clone to that because. But then I also download the developer beta and install it on my and I still can on my 2011 Air. I'm not sure how it'll run, but I can install it here. Speaking of downloading, so you mentioned earlier, and you're correct, I'm staying in an Airbnb apartment here. I happen to be in this, like, I don't know, 8-block stretch of downtown San Francisco that's got service with a company called Webpass, WEBPASS. Yeah. I did a speed test here. Now, I did this over Wi-Fi, and so I believe I was hitting the speed limit of my device. Okay, so it may go faster than this, but just bear with me. I had 300 megabits per second downstream. That's pretty good. That's twice what I get at home, ballpark. And upstream, I had 300 megabits per second. I can't wait to upload this show. I mean, it's just...
Yeah, you know what, Dave? I think your equipment is kind of dated here. So I just did a quick Google.
Yeah.
Which, for people talking about privacy and that whole thing we were talking about before, may not be... I'm sorry, I'll stop. But I just looked them up, Dave. Webpass.net.
Yeah.
And their website says gigabit internet.
It could
be. That is their tagline.
That's right. Yeah.
And one of the places that they're in, obviously, is San Fran. So I'm suspecting they're like fiber dudes.
I would assume. I mean, this is screaming here. It's
fun. So you have the potential, I think, through them or through whoever runs your gig there.
Yeah.
That they could get gigabit.
I should plug in
if they want.
Before I leave, I'm going to plug into the Ethernet here because I brought my Thunderbolt Ethernet adapter for this machine, so I can do gigabit. So I got to test it, right? I mean, come on.
What are you going to do with that power?
I'm going to test it.
I'm afraid, man.
And then I'm going to like do the happy dance, and then I'm going to pack my stuff up and go home. I don't know. What else am I going to do? Hey,
well, you could rule the world.
Are we? Let me look at my list here. If there was anything else. So these, the CloudKit, which is the thing that allows apps to use iCloud. So first of all, it's part of the new watchOS SDK. That's cool. It's also part of any signed app that's on the Mac. You don't have to be in the Mac App Store to get access to CloudKit. You need a developer certificate from Apple that is assigned to you, and that's part of their whole security model, and that's a good thing. But you do not need to sell it in the Mac App Store to get access to CloudKit now, which is huge and really kind of telegraphs that Apple either is going to change the Mac App Store or understands that the Mac App Store doesn't need to exist in the same way that the iOS App Store does, which I think is good. So, anything else that you've got before we move on to our next things here, John?
That very briefly, they showed Swift Playground.
Oh, oh
which
thank
is
you for
a
bringing
free,
that up. Yeah.
Well, it was cool. So they're really, and you know, the thing is, I mean, you know, I'm a old school developer. I'm C, C++ and things like that. But they showed this thing called Swift Playground, which utilizes their Swift language, which is open source. And it's based on what I've seen of the features of language, it's a language that's had a lot of thought put in it to avoid you from shooting yourself in the foot, like you can with languages that I've dealt with, like C and C++.
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah, I've taken a couple of Swift classes, and yeah.
It may not be the best choice for doing like embedded or high speed apps, but then who really needs that?
Right. Well, once some the people compiler do, but sees some it, don't. It's all the same. It doesn't matter.
We'll talk about that
inside
later.
Inside joke. No, yeah. No.
But they showed actually at the end of the keynote. And you know, the thing was, I got to say, the cast of characters, and I'm not saying characters in a negative sense, but the people that they put up on stage, Dave, at this keynote was awesome. It was such a mix of people. Not all of them were seasoned presenters. Not that I would say you and I are, even though we've been doing this for 10 or 11 years.
It would be 11, but who's counting?
Yeah, but I would say we're probably good on our voice presentation. I'm not sure about our stage presence, but still, they put people up. They put so many people up on stage that I had never seen before, and it was such a huge mix. A diverse mix of people, and some of them did good, some did okay.
Well, working at Apple, even if you're a developer, like working on the geekiest stuff there, as I understand it, you are presenting to your peers and to your management regularly. So what these people do, yes, they have to prep and will have prepped like crazy for WWDC, including not just the keynote, but all the sessions this week. But these people, if this is not the only time of year they present. If you work at Apple, from what I understand, you are presenting all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Which is good.
No, and in a past the corporate life, number one, I took a presentation skills course. And number two, I actually presented to the CEO of a Fortune company.
Sure.
And it was cool. But hats off to them for giving so many people within the company that I had never heard of or seen before a chance to show what they're working on. And everybody was very passionate and very excited about what they were showing. So Swift Playground is a tool that kind of allows somebody who's not necessarily a hardcore developer to develop stuff and test it and
learn.
Yeah. And learn about development. Because a lot of development is, okay, I tried this. Okay, it doesn't work. Well, let me try again. I thought it presented a nice way of visually showing you, okay, well, here's the code. And then here visually is the consequences. Yeah. And I think that's the right term of what you did. Okay, well, you screwed up. Okay, well, here's what you wanted to happen. And it happened. So that was nice. And so they presented something called Swift Playground, and it's free. And I think it's awesome because it's a tool that and other companies have done this as well. I mean,
it is that it's on the iPad, and so it's a very friendly environment. And they created a keyboard. I haven't used it yet, but it looks pretty cool. Created a keyboard to make coding easier. But I'll tell you, in the State of the Union, they spent a lot of time on Swift Playground, which sort of surprised me. They were showing some very in-depth stuff. You can import any framework that exists and write any app you want there for the most part. I mean, so it's not just for, I mean, they call it Playground, but it's not just for beginners, not even close. It's very,
no, I
very
get it.
Powerful.
I think Playground is a term that they coined when they came out with Swift, and that it, within the formal Swift environment, a Playground is an area where you can test your code without destroying everything hopefully.
That's right. Yes, it is a test ground, but it's not just for simple things, I guess is the right way to say it. All right.
State of the Union. I'm curious.
You got to make this part of what you watch. Yeah. Yeah. Just, and you can watch it tonight. I mean, there's nothing.
No, I get it, but I'm just, so I think you and I pretty much covered the keynote.
We've covered everything. I brought this stuff in. Yeah, we're good.
What's next?
I want to talk about our two sponsors. The first one is Atlassian, Atlassian.com. Atlassian is focused on teamwork. You might not know their name, but you are definitely going to know some of the names of some of the products that they make. Bitbucket, very, very popular code repository, allows you or your programmers to keep track of any changes they make. Jira, awesome engine. I've used it myself for tracking not only bugs that need to be fixed, but features that you might want to add. And it can be related to code. And what's cool is, you know, Atlassian is really focused on teamwork and integrations. And all of their stuff integrates with each other. So if you add a feature or a bug to Jira, and then you fix it and you log that change to Bitbucket, well, the two can talk to each other. So you can see the link of, what did this code change do? Oh, there, that, why? Here you go. And it ties it all together. Really, really well done. HipChat is essentially a water cooler, but far more than that, right? Allows you to really pull things together and have the whole team communicating all as one. Confluence, these are the products that Atlassian makes. Their stock ticker symbol is TEAM. If that doesn't show that they are focused on teamwork, I don't know what is, but I do know one other thing. Not only do all of their apps integrate with each other, they integrate with like 2,000 other apps from other vendors. They are really focused on this. So if you are managing or part of a team of any size, it could be a team of two or a team of 200 or 2,000. Really, even a team of one, something like Bitbucket is huge. Bitbucket and Jira, hugely helpful. So you got to check this out. Go to Atlassian, Atlassian.com. Our thanks to Atlassian for sponsoring this episode. I also want to thank Gazelle at gazelle.com. You've heard us talk about Gazelle before. What Gazelle does is they give you money for that old iPhone or iPod or old laptop that you're not using anymore. No reason to have that sitting on your desk when you could have the money sitting in your pocket. And it's super simple. You go to gazelle.com and you tell them what you have. They haven't asked you for your name yet. They haven't asked you for anything. Tell them what you have. What year is it? How big is it? You know, if it's an iPhone, what's the size? What's the color? What carrier is it tied to? Is it unlocked? Is it not unlocked? They just want to know the answers. And then they give you a price. If you like the price, then they ask you for your name and your address. Why? Because at their expense, they ship you a box. You put your iPhone in the box, but before you do, what do you take out of the box? A label and a piece of tape. After you put your iPhone in, you put the label on the box, you tape the box shut, and at their expense, it goes back to them. You've spent nothing. They open the box, make sure that what you said you were going to put in there is what you put in there, and then they send you your money. This is how it works. Sometimes they sell this stuff out the back door, right? They put, you know, a bunch of iPhone 6s in a box, and somebody buys them either for parts or for resale or whatever. But the very best ones that they get, they started saving those. Why? Because they know that sometimes you need to buy an iPhone. And you don't necessarily need to buy a brand new one. Sometimes you want to buy a used iPhone, maybe that's unlocked. Well, Gazelle has refurbished all of these things, and you can go buy from them. Check it all out. Gazelle.com. When you're checking out, either for giving them, selling them a phone, you're not going to give them anything, or buying a phone, they're going to ask where you heard about them. Put in Mac Geek Eb into the field. That helps them. It helps us. And that helps you. Our thanks to Gazelle for sponsoring this episode. All right, John, tell us, you had an interesting issue. Can you summarize it very, very quickly? I'll summarize it and I'll get you started. You had two devices, both of your iOS devices would not charge or power on. Is that correct?
Correct. I'll give you the background. and this is the background I gave to the geniuses at the Apple store I went to, and sure, I'll highlight who they are in a moment here because they are awesome. So here's what happened. So here is my recollection of what happened. So I was online, and our friend Dr. Bob Levitis, who is awesome, posted an article that linked to another article that said, hey, here's a tool that can tell you how many times the battery in your iOS device has cycled. And I'm like, well, that's kind of interesting because you normally can't get that information from the Apple.
Yeah, that's not exposed. That's right.
Interface. I'm like, okay, so I downloaded the app, and it was from a site that I went to that was linked.
Sounds
to
like somebody slipped one past the goalie at Apple.
That is my, you know, I'm glad you say that because my impression in the past was that you didn't believe what I was saying. So anyways, I downloaded this app and it seemed to, for the most part, so I think it was called Battery Percentage. So I downloaded it from this site. You know, I've installed it on both my iPhone and my iPad, and my bad, I probably should not have done that with an unknown app. So in retrospect, if you get a new app and you're not quite sure of the source, I don't know.
Hang on. I gotta rewind here. We are talking about, I wanted you to tell the story of how your iPhone and iPad both simultaneously died.
All right, so let me do that.
Died.
So I'll go right to
no,
it.
No, no, okay. No. But now, but you're telling the story about an app that you put on there.
Because I believe that it had something to do with my problem.
I think correlation and causation are not necessarily indicative of one another.
Right. And in this case, I will violently disagree with you, my friend.
There's no way.
Let me continue.
There's no way.
Yes, there is a way.
Okay.
Let me continue, and then I'll explain to you why you're wrong. Okay?
All right.
Hold on. All right. So I installed this app, and it would give you these previously unavailable statistics about your battery, power cycling, and stuff on iOS.
The reading data from the device. Okay.
Yes. Now, whether it's through published or unpublished
Doesn't matter.
APIs, we don't know. So anyways, I installed the app and it was like, okay, yeah, you know, your battery cycled this much. You know, it would even tell me interesting things. Like I actually learned that, you know, my iPad, I plugged into the wrong port on a device that I had and it was not powering on the high energy circuit, but the low energy circuit. And so anyways,
it's reading data from an API that exists, but maybe is not built to be public.
That's my best speculation.
Like Apple this changed, I think, with iOS 9, with all of those changes where Apple stopped allowing apps to read the process listing and all of that stuff. There are things that could be revealed there, as you're saying, that might cause a breach of security.
All right. So I installed this app. Okay. Everything seemed to be okay. And I installed it on both my iPhone and my iPad. Then a day after, I was off to my sister's. My sister had in another part of Connecticut had a little get together, and so I brought both my devices. And I have a car charger, and I have cables, and both the car charger and the cables are from known companies that publish their products. They're not cheap knockoffs. So I was like, okay, and I've used them I would say hundreds of times in the past. So I was confident that these products were fine. So the thing is, you know, usually when I get in my car, I plug in my phone and charge it. You know, usually I run Waze, which I know you hate, Dave, but that's fine. We'll talk about that later. But so I plug the cable plugged into the charger in my car into my phone, and I didn't feel it do the buzz, which is what an iPhone normally does if you have it on silent. And I'm like, well, that's kind of weird. Well, let me power it down and cycle power, because sometimes that solves all problems. And it still didn't work. When I cycled power on my phone, all I would see is the Apple logo on it. And I'm like, well, that's annoying.
Okay.
All right, I'll deal with this later. So then I also plugged my iPad in because the charger also had a high current port to charge the, and the iPad didn't charge either. And I'm like, okay, well, whatever. But it had plenty of battery power. So I'm like, okay, whatever. Okay. So, you know, I go to where I'm going. My phone still wasn't working right. It would cycle. I would power it up. The Apple would display on the display. It would sit there for a couple of minutes. Then it would turn off and then do the same thing again. And I'm like, all right, whatever. And it was funny because I was sitting in my sister's driveway and she's like, she was wondering. So she sees me back in and sit there. And after like 5 minutes, she's like, John, what are you doing? I'm like, my phone screwed up. She's like, well, you know, we're having a
come on in. Right.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Great. But my iPad still
works. I'm glad it's
not
just me that has to, you know, nudge you off of the thing. I get it, though, because my family has to do the same thing, too.
It was limited obsession because I'm like,
I get it.
Wait, I can fix this. Or I think I can fix it.
I think I can fix it. Yeah, exactly.
All right. So what's happened? But I have my iPad, and because it was powered up, and the iPad has a huge battery, relatively speaking. And I was showing people my photos on Flickr and blah, blah, blah. But, all right. So the event's done. I get home. And I'm like, okay. You know, the iPad is acting weird, too, because it's not accepting a charge. So I'll cycle power on that. As it turns out, neither of my devices would power up.
All right. So
the phone would show the Apple logo. And then after a couple of minutes, it would turn off. And despite my so I would try to do an iTunes restore, a DFU restore, whatever. My iPhone would not acknowledge any of these things.
So and I'm the like, same with your iPad. Right.
Well, no, the iPad, once I cycled power on that. So the thing is, I'm like, you know what? I suspect this app is doing something weird. So I'm going to cycle power on the iPad.
Hang on. This app is doing. You just talked about how you used this third party car charger. And
that I've used time and time again and never had a problem with.
Yeah. Okay. But hardware versus software that has to live in a sandbox. I mean, even if it's reading it from an API that's not published, it's still living in its sandbox. So it astounds me, frankly, that you are after telling us that story, that anyone listening that knows how iOS works would choose the piece of software as the culprit over you plugged both devices into this car charger and now it's dead. But you got a new iPhone because your phone was under warranty. So the test is to plug the new iPhone into the car charger.
I'm not going to do that.
Whoa, wait a minute. But you just said it was the software, not the car charger. So why wouldn't you plug it into the car charger? Put your money where your mouth is.
I'd rather not have to get yet another phone.
I'm with you. But I think it's your. Right. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that it's your car charger.
No.
And I think in your gut.
All right.
You know
let me explain to you again my thought process. All right. So this car charger I've used time and time again. Mm-hmm. The cables I've connected it to, I've used time and time again. I've never had an issue. And what I'm trying to explain to both the listeners and to you, Dave, is let's look at what has changed until you had the problem. What has changed is that I installed this power management app. Okay.
But it's not a power management app. It's a power reading app. It's not making any changes to your power management.
Well, I don't know that. And let me give you evidence that may indicate that the app is a problem. When I went to the same article that linked to this piece of software that is in the App Store, all of a sudden, when I went to the App Store, it said, I'm sorry, this app is not available in the U.S. App Store anymore.
Right, because they slipped it past the goalie. It was pulled because it was reading data and displaying data to the user that it shouldn't have been displaying. A lot of this stuff is available to developers, like the process listing, so that developers can do their own internal testing. But
right.
Then it's not built for public consumption.
Here's my conspiracy theory, and I'm going to stick to it. And you can violently disagree with me, and that is your right, though I feel you're wrong. I feel that this app was exercising or using parts of either a published or unpublished API that somehow invoked a unknown, let's say, unadvertised feature of the phone that all of a sudden prevented it. All I'll say, Dave, is I have seen firmware. Firmware can potentially ruin power management in devices.
Yes.
I'm going way, way back. There was the potential back in the day where you could blow up a monitor if you sent the wrong signals through a published interface to a monitor, even though all I'm saying is the only difference, my friend, is once I installed this app and I charged or interface these devices to a charger that I know worked in the past and was not from a shoddy outfit and used cables that I know that worked in the past, all of a sudden the devices malfunctioned.
Yeah.
So that's all I'm going to say.
I know. All right, let's move on because we've got
the good news is the Apple Store. The good news is the Apple Store, because it was under warranty, they swapped it out, and I'm up and running with the new one. I do want to give a shout out to my buddy Tyler at the Trumbull Apple Store, and actually to his friend.
He probably hates you for calling out his name on the show, but yep, go ahead.
Well, I'm not using his last name, but the thing is he diagnosed the problem, and he said, well, no, here's the other thing. So he said, and here's, I want to wrap it up quickly, Dave, but I want, the thing is, he said, the problem you're having is that we used our current monitoring device on your phone, and your phone is only accepting like 3 milliamps of current, where it should be accepting 500. Dave, this is the exact same problem that I had with my first iPhone 6S. Remember the one I talked about in the past?
Yeah.
And when I brought it to the Apple Store, the same Apple Store with the same awesome employees.
Did you use that same iPhone with the car charger, though?
Yes. That iPhone out of...
I'm just saying.
Actually, I don't believe I did. All right, so your speculation. I understand your reasoning, but you got to understand my reasoning. The thing is, that phone with other devices...
You're smart enough to know how iOS works. I don't know, man.
Because there are things that are hidden from me. So all I'm saying is that what changed between when everything worked great and everything didn't, and it was an app that had something to do with the charging circuitry.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say.
All right.
The good news is I got a new iPhone. The bad news is that app has been pulled. Well, probably the good news.
Yeah, but for the same reason that similar apps have been pulled, that they're exposing data that Apple has decided shouldn't be exposed. All right, let's move
on. In retrospect, what I should have done is only install the app on one device. Then I could conclusively say, was the app responsible for my woes?
Did you back up the app to iTunes?
Of course I did. And you know, I got, well, no.
So you could install the app. If you backed it up in iTunes, you could install the app.
I'd rather not. Now, I got to say, hats off.
You got to test, though. If you're going to make this claim, man, you got to test one or the other.
The thing is, I was, you know, and I didn't think I was a phone person. And then we got to move on, but still, I got to have my say here. I didn't think I was a phone person, but having my phone disabled.
Oh, yeah.
Dude.
Yeah.
The biggest thing to me was that it was my primary mode of voice communication for a lot of people that I know. I mean, I have a landline also. Yeah. And people are like, what's that? Having my phone restored. Now, the thing is, my iPad is still dead. I got to decide what to do with that.
Sure.
And that's still, so it's, I'll have more details here, but it was upsetting because having your devices all of a sudden die.
Oh no, that regardless of the reason, that it's frustrating and scary. I get why you're hesitant to test this, but, and you know, here's the thing.
If I had more iPhones or iPads, then sure, I'd be like, yeah, no
but
problem.
Here's the thing.
I'll line them up.
You've
but I
tested
don't wanna...
this with a previous iPhone, and I feel like that. I mean, if you're seeing exactly the same problem with two of these iPhones, chances are, even if it wasn't your car charger, maybe it's some other charger in your house that, you know, is frying these things. I mean, you saw this problem in your environment before the app.
Based on what I know about electrical engineering, cars have, you know, devices have fuses and current limiting circuitry.
It's hardware. It malfunctions all the time.
I can't imagine that a device that I have that used to work in the past all of a sudden decided to provide too much current or power for the device to handle and it blew it up.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Fish Group in our chat room is at macgeekup.com/stream. He says, you have a 90-day warranty on any replaced iPhone. Test it. So,
Tyler, I said this and I'm like, you know, I'm tempted to try the charger again and the app again. And he's like, well, I could replace it again for you. And I'm like, but I don't want to do that to you. Yeah. I don't want to waste your time and my time.
Yeah, but we've now gone 13 minutes on this. So I think we know whose time needs to be tested and Apple's willing to do it. So, Edgar, 14 minutes, actually. Edgar writes, where is Edgar? I had him ready. He says, listening to the photos and iCloud discussion, I'm hoping you might be able to help me answer a question. I have PhotoStream enabled. Photos on my iPhone are in my Photos app on the Mac. I plug my iPhone in and tell it to import the photos. I get a subfolder. Hang on, I gotta open this up. I'm flying blind here, literally blind on my 11-inch Air. He says, I plug my iPhone and tell it to import photos that have not yet been imported, and it does. But now I see duplicates, and he sort of some pictures that were duplicates. He says, one of the photos imported today lands in a folder, and although it looks the same, using the app named Duplicate Photos Fixer Pro, the only difference is a different file name, and using the Inspector app on the iPhone, metadata shows modified today and modified today. He says, I'm a Picasa user, but I want to switch to iCloud Photo Library, but this is scary. So this is he's getting duplicate photos on the import, which I find very interesting, John. And I'm trying to decide if it's duplicating everything or just some photos. And I'm also curious if these duplicated photos are actually being duplicated on the iPhone, because sometimes when you post, say, to Instagram, it's actually modifying the photo, putting a smaller version in or putting a different version or making if you add a filter change, it can do that stuff. So that's kind of where I'm going with this. I don't know. Thoughts?
I mean, I found the Apple software in general does a fairly good job of, you know, I've seen this in photos. It's like, well, no, it's the same photo. What are you doing?
Right.
I don't want this again.
Yeah. It's there's definitely different stuff happening, but, you know, there's something different about this photo. I would take a look at what those photos are and see if there's anything common to them, like you've posted them to social media or, you know, edited them with something. It's interesting. All right. You know what I would use is if that fails, I mean, it would be good to find the source of the problem. But if that fails, Power Photos, you know, can do a lot of duplicate detection as well. And it does a better job than Photos does. So I would test there, and maybe that'll help. Last show we talked about Genius Bar pro tips, and Ev has something to add, as always. Ev writes, he says, it's a quick tip, but when making a Genius Bar appointment, even if you are going in with a phone, be sure to check the Mac appointments box. Today, I made a Mac appointment for my iPhone because they had a same day appointment for a Mac, but the iPhone was 3 days wait. The only piece of advice I have for you when you do this is don't get caught. And so I asked Ev about this. I said, wait a minute. You know, I thought they did that because some techs work on, you know, one piece of hardware, one type of hardware, and some work on the other. And he says, that's mostly true, but they get paid more if they do both. So if you get someone who is only Mac, then they will just swap with someone who does both Mac and iOS, and you still get your early appointment. I don't know that I share that because it is a genius, you know, it is a pro tip for the Genius Bar. And you've got to, like some of the tips we shared last week, you've got to know exactly what you're doing when you apply this particular tip. But it is a good tip. If you need to get an appointment same day, it's good to know that that works. I'm not sure I can condone it, but I share it.
Now, Dave, you know, I was just at the...
Yeah.
I think we talked about my being at the Apple store.
Briefly.
Now... I'm going to offer this. Probably the best way to do this, Dave, is that I went to supportprofile.apple.com. I clicked on my phone. So if you don't know this, and anybody who has any Apple equipment, guys, you got to use this. But supportprofile.apple.com with an Apple ID can catalog all of your Apple equipment. And I have all of my Apple equipment. If it's not registered, if you didn't buy it through your Apple ID, then you can register it. But I actually scheduled my appointment using this site, Dave.
Yeah.
And it was like totally like 100. The thing is, when I got there, they were like, oh, you know, well, I brought a printout of my appointment. But the thing is, the app will allow you. First, it'll say, all right, troubleshooting. And you know, it was very good. It was like, okay, your iPhone won't start up. And you know, that was my problem. And it's like, well, try this and that didn't work. Okay, well, you want to schedule an appointment or you want a phone call? And I'm like, well, let me schedule an appointment because Trouble Store is close to me. And it's like, okay, the next one is available tomorrow at 4:10 p.m. And I'm like, okay. And, you know, it scheduled it. It sent me an email confirmation. It sent me an iCal thing on my calendar. And I even printed out. But when I showed up, they're like, oh, hi, John. Yeah, we're expecting you. Have a seat. And like within less than 5 minutes, the guy was out there. And then, you know, I brought my computer. I explained everything. I said, you know, here's what I think the problem is. And then he was cool. And I think I was in and out in less than half an hour with a new replacement iPhone. So
awesome.
That's the way you got to do it.
Awesome. All right.
If you want to save time.
moving on to Jeff here. Jeff writes, and I'm going to open this up too, because by golly, these things. He says, in show 608, you discussed ways of transferring photos from iPhone to Mac and explored alternatives other than PhotoStream or iCloud Photo Library. And in particular, one listener raised questions about the loss of resolution when texting a photo to him or herself from an iPhone. The same holds true when emailing a photo of oneself from an iPhone. For example, a photo emailed from my iPhone 6 at quote-unquote actual size, the largest of the four available options, comes through on the Mac at 2048 by 1536. Whereas the original file size as captured by the iPhone was 3264 by 2448 pixels. A photo texted to myself from the iPhone 6 and saved to my Mac via messages also comes in at 2048 by 1536. An easy and foolproof way of transferring full-size photos from iPhone to Mac is to tether the phone to the Mac and launch Image Capture, a bundled Apple applications that's been part of OS X, now Mac OS, for many years. Simply select the iPhone in an image capture device's sidebar, or in image capture device's sidebar, select the designated photos, or choose import all, and you can pull them in from there. Thanks for the actually two tips there. You're absolutely right. Even though it says it's transferring at full size, it does not. It still scales it down. One other handy thing about image capture, if you want to delete photos from your phone that otherwise do not want to be deleted, instead of doing it manually on your phone, you can bulk delete using image capture. So handy, handy stuff. Thank you for
that. And a final thing with image capture is that I've used it in the past. So, well, it's image capture. Well, what if you have something like a flatbed scanner? And for a lot of flatbed scanners, image scanners, because it's image capture is probably not a bad place to start.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than getting the software. And
yeah, that's true.
Actually found this, especially ones that are standards compliant. There are a few standards for image for scanner devices, and image capture will see a lot of them. So image capture is one of those hidden gems that does a lot of things that normally you're like, huh? Okay.
Back to show 607, Ron writes, I may have missed something about your PDF discussion in 607. But at the bottom of the PDF dropdown in the print dialog, there is an edit menu command. He says, clicking on it, you can select any folder or app. He says, I use it as a regular part of my workflow to send PDFs to folders, to Evernote, to papers, etc. It's all very, very simple. You know, I knew that, and I don't think we mentioned it in the show, so either way, I'm glad about your tip, but I knew that you could send it to apps, and I've used it for that. You can just choose an app, and if an app will accept the PDF, like Evernote would, you can just do that, and it works great. I never even thought about choosing a folder in there, but sure enough, it works just fine, and it just dumps the PDF right in that folder. Brilliant. And then, of course, you could use something like Alfred to process pictures in a folder, whatever. But very, very cool. It's very powerful. And I totally never thought about that. So very, very good stuff. Thank you for sharing that. It's good stuff. Fun. All right. We'll hear from Barry, because it's only fitting that we would hear from Barry on our anniversary show here.
Hey, Dave and John, it's Barry. Hope you are well, and congratulations on 11 years. That is awesome. Wanted to respond quickly to Michael from episode 607 on Apple Watch layouts. Got this tip from Mac Sparky, David Sparks, and he suggested putting apps into an X format. That way it's a lot easier to navigate around on the watch, and you can make each leg do something like games or productivity or home automation. and I found it to be a very useful way of navigating around the watch quickly. Just want to pass that along. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Barry, for all of it. And yeah, you know, Apple solved some of this today with watchOS 3, which of course we don't get until the fall, doing their with the dock and being able to use that button for other things other than sending messages to your, you know, 24 favorite people or whatever. But yeah, I think the X layout is still quite valuable, even past the fall once we get watchOS 3. So thanks, Barry. Good stuff. Someday maybe you'll get an Apple Watch now that they're making it more and more useful, John.
And less expensive.
And less expensive.
The latest role is $299, I think, is now the entry level price. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. And often you can find them refurb, not necessarily from Apple, but from like Best Buy for even less than that.
I've heard about that.
Yeah. It's cool. All right. In show, we just got two more to do and then we'll get out of here because frankly, we all have to get out of here. Today I actually have a time limit. But Bob, in show 608, we were talking about Wi-Fi bridges and all of that. And let me make sure I have the right PDF up here. Yeah. We were talking about bridging Wi-Fi between two locations and, you know, short range locations. And so there's two that listeners have recommended that are much less expensive than the ones that we talked about in the show. Rob recommends this thing. And I don't even have it in front of me because I put an Amazon link in, but it's he's getting 450 megabits per second between them. And I think they are, I'm pulling them up here. Oh yeah. Ubiquiti Networks, NanoBeam ACs for $99 a piece. And so two of them would be $200 and you can push significant data, certainly enough to do what most home networks would need to do, getting his data from his garage to his office. So we will put that in the show notes if I can do that while I'm typing here. And then a second one, the Ingenious HENH500s from Chris, $186 for a pair of those. And again, the same kind of performance. So definitely worth checking this out. For $200 or less, you can kind of solve this problem automatically. And that's what we like. So fun stuff. Anything else on that, John, before we move on to the last one here? As I'm trying to sort through this. That's the only problem with the 11-inch Air and doing this show is I don't get to have my zillions of windows open. But we're getting there.
The only thing I'll mention is that, so I was at my local warehouse store the other day and I saw some guys installing antennas.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, microwave antennas? And they're like, yep. And I'm like, for who? And they're like, oh, Verizon. Here, and then I'll move on.
It's cool.
Because I've taken a lot of time. But I'm like, oh, really? And they're like, yeah, they're for Verizon cell phones. And we're upgrading these antennas from the 40 watt to the 60 watt. I was actually kind of shocked, Dave, because I'm like, watts? Like tens of watts? Wow. But apparently that is the power level that a lot of cell phone towers use, at least probably more typical in densely populated areas. Like, dude, I mean, you know, I wouldn't say a city. Yeah, I'd say I'm a city, like you.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
but I was surprised at the relatively low power level. But, you know, I was happy with the fact that I could see what they were putting up there. And I'm like, those are microwave antennas, right? And they were like, well, no, they're, you know, something, you know, whatever 1,000 megahertz. I'm like, well, yeah, that's gigahertz and that's microwave, right?
Sure.
They're like, oh, yeah. They were like, you know, contractors. But it was fun to see them. And it's BJ's. But they have a big water tower and everybody wants to rent their space.
Oh, yeah, right.
So it was a lot of fun.
Makes sense.
But 60 watts? Really?
Yeah, it makes sense, though. I mean,
I guess. Well, the phones, I think, are on the orders of, what, milliwatts, right? So the towers shouldn't have to be too much more.
Well, they've got to go a long distance, though. I don't know. I guess the phones do, too. To clarify something that listener John asked in, he asked it after hearing us talk about it in show 608. He says, did I hear you correctly when you said that 1Password would sync with iCloud Keychain. I've been looking for all over for this and can't find it anywhere. And no, it won't sync with 1Password won't sync with iCloud Keychain. And I apologize if I wasn't clear about that. When using 1Password with Safari, with iCloud Keychain enabled, the two actually tend to work very, very well together. If I insert a password from one, say if I insert a password from iCloud Keychain and 1Password doesn't know about it, it'll ask me if it wants to add it to 1Password. Similarly, if the reverse happens and I add a I submit a password from 1Password, if iCloud Keychain doesn't know about it, it will ask me if it wants to know. If I use it from one and the other does know, it remains quiet. So it's not, it really works.
Good.
Yeah, no,
that was my question, because a lot of these are extensions and they kind of watch your traffic and they kind of jump in.
Yeah, no, this
so,
is
so
like,
does 1Password back off if it sees Keychain, or does Keychain back off?
It's not it backs off. It, if it sees Keychain, it backs off if you've entered a password that it already knows about. Right. Which is great, because if you typed it in, it's not going to pester you. Hey, I mean, what's it going to ask you? It's like, I already know about that one. So it just leaves it alone. So it is an extension. It is, you know, watching the DOM, I would assume, of the page. I don't know how else it could do it. But yeah, it works great. So and it, like I said, when we were talking about it in the last show, I really didn't intend to use it this way long term, but I have it running this way on all my machines, and it works great. So that's how it's going to go. Feedback at MacGeekGab.com is where you can email us.
Dave, I got something to say, but first, I don't know if I heard you right. And oh my gosh, the volume is wandering. But I think you said feedback at MacGeekGab.com.
Feedback at MacGeekGab.com. I'm hearing the volume fine here. It must just be Skype doing its thing. And if you're a premium listener, you can call premium, or not call, you can write to premium at MacGeekGab.com. If you want to call, you can call 224-888-GEEK, which, John, is
4335.
That's correct. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/groups/MacGeekGab, or to make it easier, just go to MacGeekGab.com/Facebook. I want to thank everybody for being with us and supporting us for however many of these 11 years you've been apart. I know many of you have actually been with us for all 11.
But thanks, Barry.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really astounding. And we're still having fun doing this. So I see no reason that we will stop. Even when we argue about things, I think we both find that kind of fun, because
no, it's a spirited, intelligent discussion. Exactly. I wouldn't call it an argument. Well, because
we're even arguing as to whether or not we should call it an argument. It's perfect.
Well, even when you're wrong, Dave.
I want to thank CashFly.
I'm kidding.
CashFly.com for providing all the bandwidth. I want to thank you, John. You and I have known each other for basically forever.
Decades.
Many decades. Yeah. I was in my teens when we met, so it's been a long time. But it's been fun doing this show. I love it. So it's great.
Likewise.
Thanks,
and
man.
But it's not only you, Dave, but it's our community, which I think we hinted to. But if we didn't, Dave and I can't do this alone.
Nope.
It's impossible. And to the hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands, perhaps, of people that are part of our community, we thank you from the bottom of our hearts.
And absolutely.
I'm honest.
No, it's true. Thank you for saying that. My sentiments exactly. I want to thank all of our sponsors, of course, Gazelle.com, Atlassian.com, Atlassian.com, Smile Software at smilesoftware.com/geek, Squarespace at squarespace.com/MGG, Otherworld Computing at maxsales.com, and of course, Barebones Software at barebones.com, Casper at casper.com/MGG. John, I started this. You finish it. What is it that you want to say to them?
Well, I'm going to finish it because, you know, I am so glad that I heard my colleague Dave here arrive in San Francisco, because you know what that means to me? That means that he was clever. He was careful. He got through TSA, and that means he didn't get